This piece was brought to you by Whole Foods Market, wholefoodsmarket.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is the news.
Imran Khan is not your typical foodie, which is precisely why his work stands to make such a significant impact on the future of New York's food system. Far from conventional, his work history spans disparate fields, professions, and geographies. Khan trained as a biochemist in Houston, Texas, and then dabbled in a few private sector jobs after graduation. He first took up work in engineering and the materials sciences, most notably at 3M's Los Angeles office. And it was there that he mastered the company's process of disciplined innovation, collaborating to invent and refine new products with specific applications in mind. Although he enjoyed the results-driven approach to that job, he began to feel a pull toward the public service. So, in the first of many such decisions, Khan acted on his impulse and turned to education, teaching chemistry to high schoolers on the outskirts of Dallas.
I liked science. I liked the idea of communicating science principles in the way of lesson plans to an eager audience of students. It turns out later that I discovered that not all students are so eager to learn high school chemistry. That's neither here or there. Taught for about 3 years in Texas public schools in the Dallas area. Got a little bit more interested in community development work. I saw that a lot of the problems that you saw within schools were reflective of not necessarily things that were happening within school walls, but sort of outside of school walls. And so I really got more interested in community affairs and community development policy that would help further community-wide goals.
Khan's interest in community engagement prompted him to question the strict boundaries conventionally drawn around the classroom. Keen to meet and teach his students in a completely different setting, he began to conduct classes in a nearby community garden. Encouraged by some early success, he established Develop U, a non-profit organization that took over free plots of land as part of its community development and urban renewal efforts in South Dallas. Soon enough, Khan was drafting lesson plans inspired by the science principles contained within the community garden.
And so again, taught high school chemistry for a number of years out of the greater Dallas area, and then started a nonprofit organization that worked to use urban community gardens as a way to teach basic science principles. And really the idea was to get students together in a space that wasn't really traditional in terms of what they're used to. You know, this wasn't a classroom environment. This was a way to get students outside of what they would normally associate with a school environment. And then just really got kids together around basic community gardening lessons.
You tricked them.
We tricked them. And sometimes, we would sprinkle in some science lessons here and there, but it was mostly just a way to get people together.
The program was well received, and Khan was heartened, hoping to eventually expand its reach. Before long, though, he was offered the chance to attend graduate school at the University of Virginia. Although it meant moving on from his garden-focused project before it could be further developed, Khan understood a knowledge of public policy would allow him to continue his work on a much larger and systematic scale. Once part of the public policy space, he understood, he could potentially achieve far more than anything that were possible through a single project alone.
I had been interested in community development policy for a very long time. I was very much interested in social policy and examining social factors that go into a community's well-being. And so went out to the University of Virginia and entered into a 2-year Master of Public Policy program. And really that was really my first introduction into really analytical analysis of policy. Ways to apply scientific, mathematical, economic reasoning to study public policy and how communities and economies work. And so really got to see policy from a bit of a different angle. My career up until that point was focused more on local issues. And then, really got a nice snapshot of, federal policy through this program.
Khan completed his master's degree and, armed with a new skill set, he returned to the workforce as a technology consultant in Washington, D.C. Though the job brought him into contact with varied projects and clients, he feared ending up where he had started, concerned that his graduate studies hadn't steered him in the community-oriented direction he had hoped.
But then, all of a sudden, an offer came through from New York State, and I got an offer to serve as an Empire State Fellow. This is Governor Cuomo's program, currently in its third year, in which the administration is trying to bring in people with private sector, previous public sector background into New York State government. So this is a way to really bring in a cadre of fellows that would enhance state government by bringing a little bit more of an entrepreneurial mindset into state government. You know, when we think about state government or just government in general, we don't really think of that space or that sector being very entrepreneurial and very innovative. So this was a way to kind of bring that, you know, bring people with that mindset into that space.
This is where Khan's unorthodox work history really comes together. The Empire State Fellows Program not only encouraged, but required the diversity of experience he had accumulated across traditionally unrelated fields. Running for 2 years, the program connects new inductees with a high-level policymaker within a state department, throwing them into the collaborative process of policy development. It's the state's hope that lateral thinking and innovation will follow.
So one of the other things within state government that's been true historically, at least, is that government agencies, specifically within New York State, have functioned within a silo. So there's been very little overlap and crossover in terms of project collaboration historically. So one of the other ideas behind this program was to bring in a group of fellows, and through the dispersion of fellows across agencies, would create better lines of communication between agencies. One of the great things about this Empire State Fellows Program is that I think it really brings people into government that are interested in bringing more of this entrepreneurial mindset. I think that this has an effect on people across state government. I think that when you have people now starting to think about problems in a different way and starting to create solutions that require involvement and input from multiple agencies, I think you can make some really cool things happen.
Khan's outlook revolves around a simple question with complex ramifications. How can we do more with what we've got? For want of a better expression, he practices a form of professional connecting the dots. He first identifies the gap between need and existing practice, and then turns his attention to the whole spectrum of state resources and programs that could be used to formulate an effective response. This makes for a highly sustainable form of government. One that works not with a blank slate, but gathers information and assets from its stock of existing holdings. Within this framework, Khan has maintained an interest in food, specifically community agriculture and increased public nutrition. He explains how work in the food sphere can be a driver for advances across many fronts.
I think specifically for food and agriculture, there are so many ways to use food and agriculture to not just economically develop communities, but also to make sure that people have access to a healthier diet. There are, I think, so many social effects that are associated with food. You know, in schools, you can't get a kid to learn if he's hungry. You can't get a steel worker to think about, you know, his or her job if he or she is hungry or thinking about how to put food on the table. So making healthy food accessible to people, you know, I think is a huge challenge. You wouldn't think that it's a challenge in a country like America, where, you know, we are the richest country in the world, and there's a ton of opportunity here in this country. And it's sad to see that there are populations of people, you know, segments of the population in this country where people just don't have access to decent food, which is sad. And I think that government can play a really big role in helping to, you know, alleviate some of that.
So what forms have some of these food-related projects taken through his work with the Empire State Fellows?
So we've worked on a number of projects so far in the, you know, 9 or 10 months I've been with the state. You know, we're working on developing a fruit and vegetable prescription program where we're working closely with Empire State Development and Department of Health, and of course, New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets, to link community health clinics and organizations that are very much invested in community health issues with local farmers markets. And we're trying to create a program where we incentivize healthy eating, nutrition programming through providing vouchers for fresh fruits and vegetables that program participants can take to partnering farmers markets and cash in for fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, in a way to change behavior, change eating and buying behavior. So that's one of the programs. I think that's a really good program. That's a really good example of a program that I think brings together various agencies that are geared at solving, you know, a common goal.
Another area of focus has been developing the state government's role as a responsible consumer through its ongoing procurement activities.
One of the other projects that very recently I've gotten very involved with is this procurement initiative. So there's this program by New York that was termed out of the Office of General Services of New York State. So the Office of General Services is essentially the central procurement agency for the entire state. So they do all the buying and selling for every state agency. And they have central contracts that go through this agency, the Office of General Services, in the amounts of millions of dollars a year. And so it's easy to think about this idea that, you know, if you're able to make some type of change, some type of reform within a venue that's responsible for purchasing millions and millions of dollars of product a year, then why not take advantage of that to further some of the, you know, interests of the stakeholders that we as a state are interested in furthering and interested in working with. And of course, with New York City, we have one of the largest appetites in the country. Millions of people are here, and you know, the restaurant scene is very vibrant, very lively, playing along the whole idea of, you know, there's this local movement for local and regional food. Why not create pathways for New York growers, producers, food processors to interact with end user institutions like restaurants or like massive school district like the one that we have here in New York City, and work with them in a way that we can get more food and agriculture, more local food and agriculture products, you know, into their hands. So that's really what this procurement initiative is about.
Once this area is opened up, a whole spectrum of possibility unfolds. What could the effects be if the state government became a more mindful food consumer, a buyer that made more sustainable, equitable, and delicious choices for its hospitals, schools, and offices? This presents an opportunity to positively impact a huge catchment of the state's residents and a powerful chance to lead by example. Time and again, Khan has found that food, what and how we eat, can play a vital role in finding answers to some of the state's biggest challenges.
And there are a lot of distressed, you know, a lot of economically depressed areas across New York State. You know, outside of New York City, there are several, you know, communities in upstate New York that are really suffering. Using food and agriculture as a driver for economic development seems, you know, like a very ideal way for you know, rural communities, particularly places that are known for just vast acres of farmland, give them an opportunity to really develop. You can begin to use statistics to think about the communities that are hit hardest when it comes to having access to healthy food. And then once those communities are identified, I think that you begin to develop programs that serve those communities specifically. And I think that you can use different parts of the food system and connect various parts of the food system to make sure that you know, that community is being served in the best way. So in terms of local food, if you have an at-risk community that's located 20 to 30 miles away from a farm that produces a variety of commodities, then why not make that linkage, or why not try to make that linkage, right? So now you have economic development, you know, in the sense that you're giving farmer X more business, and then you have, you know, community Y down the street that's benefiting because, you know, they have healthier food. I think one of the things, one of the negative things about globalization is that, you know, it's easy to distribute product in bulk across the world, you know, across the U.S., across the state of New York. But I think that if you're able to create a system where you have a transfer of goods at a very local or regional level, then I think that there are so many positive, you know, there are so many positive elements that are associated with that process. You have economic development for one party, and you have healthier, you know, healthier food options for the other party.
Both the state of New York and the food sphere hold particular potential for progress and positive outcomes. As Khan explains, the state is well placed to create integrated food programs, given its diverse agricultural output and engaged market.
I think that we as a state are just now starting to put some of the pieces together. I think that agriculture for a number of years have been on people's minds at the highest level of state government. You know, we're a very diverse agricultural state. So we rank in the top 10 for, you know, a number of commodities, you know, apples, of course, but things like cabbage, right, green beans, you know, there's so many commodities that I think we're economically competitive in on a national scale. And then, you know, when you combine that factor with the fact that, again, we have, you know, one of the biggest appetites in the country in New York City, I think that you can really pilot a lot of cool programs in which you're connecting the source, some agricultural source, to some end user, whether it's a person, whether it's an institution, whether it's a restaurant. And I think that very, very few states have that dynamic in that they have a very diverse agriculture state and a very hungry population.
Additionally, Khan has come to find that food and agricultural policy are areas in which you don't need a lot to do a lot, a liberating and encouraging prospect.
I love the work that I'm doing now, making connections. One of the cool things about food and agriculture, I think, that makes it different from other policy areas is that you don't need a ton of money to make things happen. You don't need a lot of money to really make projects grow. Infrastructure that's associated with agriculture, really, at the end of the day, not very expensive compared to infrastructure that's associated with other types of venues, other types of institutions. So I think you can do a lot with a little in food and agriculture policy. And that's exciting, you know, because in government, it's sometimes hard to make a case for, you know, a really expensive project. But I think because you don't need a lot in food and agriculture to do a lot, I think that you can be very, very innovative with the resources that you have.
On the face of things, Imran Khan uses quantitative and analytic data to assess New York State's food and agricultural policies. And on the face of it, that's a valuable contribution. Action rooted in scientific and economic principles that are seldom the basis for decision-making within the food world's avant-garde. Dig a little deeper, though, and Khan's work prompts us to rethink many of the unspoken strictures and separations that persist in government, economics, and public thought. This practice of making the best use of existing resources benefits the food world and bears wider application for a future of more thoughtful and engaging governance. None of this is to say that the chefs, farmers, and restaurateurs of the food world are any less essential to its vitality. What it does mean is that, as with any pioneering movement, those working within the progressive food world are faced with the consistent challenge of how to communicate beyond their ranks. This is why voices like Khan's are justifiably exciting, as they introduce a new voice, speaking from an unexpected perspective, to the chorus already calling for a more equitable, delicious, and common sense approach to food. To realise this aspiration, the food community must continuously evolve its self-definition, expanding the cast of actors involved in its activity, and thankfully, Imran Khan is now one of them. This is Elizabeth Kulas reporting in collaboration with Aaron Fairbanks for Heritage Radio Network.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.